Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, November 15th. I'm back, but not with Rachel today. Rachel is out for 3 days, gone to Vegas. And I'm joined once again by Kay Brandt. Welcome to the show,
Kay. Good morning.
Thank you for coming, as always. Love to see you.
Love to see you, too.
I know you have a long drive to take, but if you come here, it means that you must like coming here.
That's true.
So we try to make your stay pleasant and...
Where are the appetizers?
I know. Well,
where's
we'll have some later after the show, okay?
Yeah, that would make it very pleasant.
There you go. You know, if you look forward to something during the show. Yeah, I just kind of want to tease you before. We'll have goodies for you. So have you been? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's okay. Everything's busy. Tonight is the nominations party for the XBiz Awards, which happens in January. And tomorrow night is the AVN nominations party. So they do them back to back.
Oh, wow. And you're going?
On a Wednesday and a Thursday, huh?
And you're going?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are like, for those of you who don't know, those are like adult entertainment or porn awards, if you want to call
them
that.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it is that the AVN awards are like the Oscars of porn,
okay.
And the XBiz awards are like the Emmys.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's like they're really on equal levels, but
AVN is really the leader, really.
Right, because it was the first adult industry news, first adult industry business publication that made the adult industry
like the
look,
trade
legitimate.
Yeah, that's true, right? Mm-hmm. What's the guy's name? Fishburne or something?
Fishbein. Paul is no longer involved. Well,
no,
I think he's kind of like on the fringe, but he sold the company. He sold AVN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't have known of him unless he was on the Howard Stern show.
And uh-huh. Then,
so he was way back when,
yeah,
you know, in the
90s.
I think. So that's when it started. They were bringing girls to Howard's show to do all kinds of shenanigans.
It's funny because, you know, I started going to the AVN Awards probably, 7 years ago, 2010. I started going to the AVN Awards because I got into the adult industry as writer-director in 2009.
Okay, gotcha.
So that was my first year where I had movies going up, you know, for nominations.
Right.
But I, you know, I mean, the stories of how it used to be, like how the AVNs were when they first started are so funny.
Right.
You know, like now it's a big production. It's a, you know, they're probably spending a whole lot of money putting this up at the Hard Rock Cafe, not the Hard Rock Cafe, but the Hard Rock Hotel in Vegas.
Right.
And it's just a big, it almost looks like a Vegas show.
Right.
You know, the tickets are very expensive for people to get in, but you're surrounded by porn stars, and it's an award show.
Right, they run
like
it parallel to CES usually, right?
So people
are there already.
No longer? They separated the events.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Because Vegas is too congested then or something?
It might be. I mean, it's very crowded for the AVN Awards.
Yeah.
And just like the week before are the XBiz Awards. So we have a busy November and a busy January in the industry, you know, with everything that's going on. Because it's not just award shows. We have conventions that lead up to the award shows, both XBiz and AVN. So it's like two really busy weeks. Because last year I sat on panels at both conventions for XBiz and AVN and spoke about being a woman in the industry. And so it's a busy time, but I just, you know, the stories I've heard about how Paul Fishbein used to hold the AVN Awards when it was first starting are just very funny. Like I heard it was very highbrow.
Really?
Yeah. It's very Vegas show like.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
The hosts are great. They have comedians that host every year, as well as like you know, adult industry stars, and it's a very well put together show. Lots of visuals, audio, lighting, the whole thing. It's an extravaganza. They had I can't remember the singer. He sings "Welcome to My House."
Welcome to My House. I don't know that song.
Oh, my God. I cannot believe I can't remember his name. Anyway,
What about
he played live at the AVN Awards.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they have big you know, talent that shows up. But back in the day, in the day, AVN was held, the AVN Awards were held in a conference room in a hotel. So small, but everybody had to come in tux. It was a formal event. It's still a formal event, but there's still a lot of filmmakers and executives stuff, that just show up in jeans, you know, like expensive jeans, but still like not totally. But then it was the men had to wear a tux, women had to wear gowns, and it was very serious. Yeah, you sat there seriously
they
at your table.
Themselves very seriously.
It went on for hours and hours, but you know what? You never get tired of hearing them go, and the winner of the best blowjob scene 2017 is.
Yeah. Wow. Listen, I want to segue from this one because.
Yes, that's true.
No, because plus we're going to have a couple of guests who are family oriented, so. But they'll cut out the interview. It's okay. You don't have to.
You know,
to
what can I do? I show up on a day of nominations party. I got to
talk
about what's
real. And this show, we talk about everything.
Yeah. There are a lot of people in the industry that have children.
Yeah. No,
so
I
understand. They can benefit from this advice.
No, I know, but it's. So I agree. It's funny, you know. I mean, best this, best that. And
it's
we're
hysterical.
Like, and we call it talent, and you go, okay, well, you know. Raise some brows, but
it's
know.
Also it's not just the categories, it's the titles of some of the movies that fall into the categories that just you can't take it seriously. You cannot take it seriously. It's just so ridiculous.
Right. And porn is so politically incorrect, right? I mean, because it's got like, I mean, they exploit different races, you know, like interracial, they exploit like taboos, incest, things like
that.
It's like anything goes in porn, almost.
Almost. I mean, almost. You know, there's a lot of federal regulations on the porn industry.
Right, but what I'm saying is there were, if there weren't regulations, people would go, you know,
I suppose
very bizarre.
And I've said this before, that literature, erotic books, is far more explicit and boundary breaking and exploitive and
taboo-ish
than anything I could ever make as a film in adult.
Right?
Really, because in literature you can pretty much get away with anything.
Anything, right?
In film we cannot.
That's true, right?
Well, because we're bound by federal regulations of decency.
Okay. I wonder why books don't have... I mean, I'm so grateful we don't have it on books. My God. Well, we don't need all the censorship. You know what I'm saying?
No, we don't need all that censorship. And, you know, there's no... I would be lying if I told you that the most taboo of subjects are the highest selling books.
Yeah, probably.
And pretty high selling movies.
Right.
And what does that reflect in society? I don't really know. You know, we're not necessarily suppressed society, but we are.
Right. And no, I mean, look, I just finished a book I highly recommend. It's called Everybody Lies. And
Ooh.
It's about big data and
Ooh.
How they, so like they show you how, I mean, it's not that exact science. It's not really, I don't even know if it's a science, but this guy figured out if you go on Google Trends,
okay,
you can start looking for searches and see where they happen, how people ask these things and so forth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if you put in, like, in Google Google Trends, you put in something like, my husband wants me to, and then, you know, and then you see what people respond in different countries, you would die. You would die. Like, for example, in India, my husband would like me to breastfeed him.
That's
in
normal.
India.
I think that's normal.
Well, but people don't admit it. That's what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
But they do admit it to Google.
Yeah.
They do admit it to Google. So what I'm saying is when you start looking at this stuff, you realize what people really think.
Yeah.
You know, about other races, about politics, about sex, about all these things. Because, like, and so whereas you're totally open to something like Google, right? On Facebook, for example, that's the least representative of what happened, what we think, because we only put up the nice things.
See, and I wish that was the case with my Facebook feed, because all I see all day are people airing their dirty laundry and admitting private details of their lives to people. I mean, I'm friends with them on Facebook, but I'm not friends with them. I don't know who most of these people
are. Most
at
of them
all,
like
but
that.
I know more about them than I ever wanted to know about them because of Facebook.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's amazing how people are so...
But what I'm saying is I don't know how honest it is, because, look, some people are like depressed or negative types, and then they'll say anything. But for the most part, I think people will only show pictures where they look good.
That's me for sure.
Share happy things only. That's what I mean. So people are not truthful on Facebook. And when you go on Google, man, you're truthful because you look for the deepest shit that you want, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. But I did, at any rate, so he did some profiling on the country, on the way we think and sort of thing. And turns out we're very racist.
Oh, definitely.
We're very deviant.
Oh, we're judgmental. Completely judgmental.
Yeah.
You know, when you see somebody, if you're driving in your car and you see somebody jogging down the street, do you judge them?
No.
You don't? Not even a little bit?
In what way? What do you mean?
I don't know. I find myself, like, I have, like, a knee-jerk reaction to judge people. You know, like, their
outfit,
their this, their
that,
whatever.
I see. Okay, the way they're dressed. Not the fact that they're running.
And I really have to consciously stop myself from doing it. And I don't know how long that has been in me to do that. And I never really was consciously aware of it until over the past year or so. And now I consciously just send them good vibes when I see them. Good for you, you know, good for you, exercising up early on the street, doing your thing. You know, like, why, what is my problem so much of what I stand for is to not judge.
Right.
And to not create stigma.
But yet you feel it's like something that you can't control.
Yeah. Well, it was ingrained, you know. I have very judgmental parents.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that maybe, you know, like I said, I wasn't really even consciously aware of it. And it's not even, I don't speak it out loud. It's just a thought that occurs in my head when I'm, you know, whatever, to judge. And it feels so much better to not be in a place like that, mentally and emotionally.
Right.
Feeling like everybody you see, whether it's at the grocery store, the gas station, or just passing on the street or in an elevator, is somebody that you have to take critical judgment of, because I know nothing about them, they know nothing about me.
Exactly.
And their life is separate. They can do whatever the hell they want, just like I can. But it feels so much better to come from a place of love and openness and acceptance than to stand in a place of judgment. And then on a more global level, that's the big problem.
Hold that thought. We have our guests calling in right now, so we'll go back to that one, you know. But we're going to take the callers right now, and we're going to be joined by the Spores. Mike and Heather, are you with us this morning?
Yes, we are.
Oh, wow. You guys are loud. Let me turn this down a little bit. Well, I see you're on a speakerphone, but we'll try to make it sound good. So you guys, where do you, well, I guess you're here in L.A. somewhere, right? So you're Southern Californians.
That's right. Yeah, we're based out of Thousand Oaks, but I work in the city, so I'm up there every day.
Oh, wow, cool. So now you guys do some stuff that people are attracted to in the form of blog. You also are an editor for BuzzFeed. Tell us a little bit about this. Maybe a little bit about your family. How long have you guys been married? Do you have kids?
Sure. Well, we've been married for 10 years, although we've been together for 15 years. And we've got two kids, a daughter who is named Annie, who is 7, and a little guy, James, who's 4. And we've been kind of doing chronicling our life on the blog that my wife, Heather, started. You could kind of talk about the blog.
Yeah, I've been writing about our lives and ups and downs of being parents here in Southern California ever since they were born.
Yeah. Now, are you guys both originally from Southern California?
I am. Mike's from Northern California, but we try not to hold it against him.
Oh, I see. Okay. But you guys are West Coasters for sure. So so you guys are well qualified to tell us how to deal with raising children out here, and probably the rest of the world too. So Heather, tell us a little bit about your blog. It's called The Spores Are Multiplying, and that's a great name and memorable for sure. When did you start this blog?
I started it when I was pregnant with my daughter, and I've just been writing about, everything from pregnancy to moving to getting your kids in school, teaching them how to be little humans, just the whole kit and caboodle.
That's cool. So
I think there's a lot of kind of when the crazy things happen with the kids and they have like a meltdown at the supermarket or any of the kind of funny stuff that happens, you know, she's written about that and I've written about that on the site too, but also kind of talking about the more serious stuff as well. I think it's got a good mix there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to keep realistic and relatable, because there's no point in my opinion in putting out there some kind of fake perfection.
Right.
No one wants to read about that.
Exactly. And that's what we were talking about just because before you guys called in, we were talking about Facebook, how people always put the best face forward and we don't really know what's in the background, you know. So, and you guys are giving us more behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, the really interesting thing from a parent's perspective when you're talking about Facebook is that it's easy to get really discouraged, and when you see all these other parents putting up these pictures and it looks like their life is perfect,
right,
and they're making the Pinterest meals and they're getting these great selfies with their kids. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that, you know, when they're not taking those pictures and putting the perfect pictures on the line, their kids are having meltdowns on aisle three, and, you know, they're having fights, and the kids are having issues, and they're like any other parent. So you shouldn't, you know, you got to try to remember that and not be discouraged about the reality that everyone's the same, even if they look great on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. I know. But so you guys obviously don't cover everything, right? You keep some stuff private for yourselves.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
We try to, you know, we have lots of things. I think I say that we only blog maybe 15% of our lives.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we do is we say when our kids are older and they stumble upon this, because pretty much everything survives on the internet forever, and they read this post about when they were four, will they be okay with it?
Exactly.
And so we avoid, you know, writing stuff that's embarrassing for them or makes them look bad. You know, it's the stories we tell are usually the ones that make the kids, you know, look good when they're being funny or something. And, you know, yeah, we represent them in the best light possible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, you know, I mean, that makes sense and everything. And I think a lot of people are looking for, many new parents are looking for guidance and, you know, what do I do? How do I deal with this? There's no owner's manual for kids, you know. They just come into
our
life.
That's exactly it. You know, there is no owner's manual. And, you know, that's one of the reasons we wrote the book that we wrote, which is The Toddler Survival Guide, Complete Protection from the Whiny Unfed. And
that's a funny title.
It's a parody of sorts of The Zombie Survival Guide, which was a big hit book by Max Brooks a little while back. And it's, you know, in a way, it's kind of made, we did that parody because in a lot of ways, toddlers are like zombies, you know.
Yeah.
They follow you everywhere you go. They drool. They're hard to understand. If you're not careful, they'll destroy your lives. So you got to be really careful with them. And it's basically a book about living with toddlers in the 21st century and how to, you know, take care of them and survive all the pitfalls. But it's got a lot of humor in it. But, I mean, like you said, there's no real book. So, this is kind of a fun book that toddler parents can get and hopefully get a little helpful hints out of.
Yeah. And you guys can get the book, you know, on Amazon, anywhere else, The Toddler Survival Guide. And Mike and Heather Spohr. Now, I wanted to ask you, you guys obviously have concerns for the future of the kids and everything. Do you think they're going to have a tougher world than ours to deal with when they're, say, our ages? What kind of future do you see for our kids' generation, for your kids' generation?
Certainly going to be very different than anything that we grew up with. And, you know, it's hard to even imagine what their lives will be like when there are, you know, adults and have their own kids, because things are changing so quickly these days. Technology is changing at a rapid pace and the world seems a little crazy right now. So it's hard to imagine.
I definitely worry too about when you think about something like college, for example, how, you know, it's getting more and more expensive every year. And then the impact of having a college degree gets less, you know, prominent as time goes on. It used to be if you had a college degree in like 1985, everyone's like, oh, let's hire that guy, he's got a college degree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But now it's kind of commonplace, and it doesn't carry the same weight it did, and it costs way more to get. So things like that definitely worry me about, you know, the kid, our kids, and everyone's kids.
I don't think that there's any way that you could ever shortchange the importance of an education, though, and having that degree.
No, absolutely right. There's never going to be a replacement for that.
No, there will never be a time for that.
On the positive side, there's going to be some changes for them. I mean, my kids could end up having a career in some industry that hasn't even been invented yet. And that was certainly not something that we ever thought about when we were growing up.
Oh, definitely. I think things like environmental science are just at the beginning of what that degree in itself, what that education will bring forth in the future, because I think that's going to be a very big field. That and information security. So anything IT, anything that has to do with keeping all of our information safe. So those will definitely be big
factors.
Yeah. I think big sectors to go into.
Yeah.
Go on. Absolutely. I think that's part of it. Is you got to kind of throw out the old rules of how we expect everything to work and kind of start thinking about, the new world that we're living in. And everything you said, I mean, those are some amazing, fields that are going to be expanding in huge ways. So, yeah, I think just having kind of a new perspective and new way to look at things is probably going to be the key. Yeah.
I just think about, if you go back into when, for me, I was a teenager in the 80s. And, if it wasn't for us embracing things like Atari and the first Pac-Mans and Pong and a handheld game like Simon, where you had to mimic, you had to repeat those were all educational toys, but it was the very first, that was the first incarnation of video gaming, of actually, going into gaming and technology. And if we hadn't embraced that in the 80s, like my great grandparents embraced television and radio in the early 1900s, look at everything that they saw. Now we're seeing, that because we were so accepting and open to these new things coming in, we're the ones that put all of this on the map for the future generations to build upon. And that's all that's happened. I think ultimately what scares me more than anything, and I've talked about this on this show before, is the fact that we, by embracing social media as adults, have completely eradicated any chance of privacy for future generations. They will never know.
I wonder if our kids will rebel against it. They won't want to be on social media because they'll have seen the pitfalls of it. Or they just won't want to do it because it's what their parents did and they want to be different.
No, I doubt that that'll happen because they have it's in their DNA now to accept the fact that they can communicate with whoever they want at any given time just by picking up their phone and sending a text or doing the not Skyping, but what is it called on iPhones?
Snapchat or something.
Not Snapchat, but whatever.
FaceTime.
Yeah, FaceTime. Exactly. That and, and the fact that there are viable jobs to be had by having your own YouTube channel that's successful.
I work at BuzzFeed I work with a lot of young millennials there. And that's really the key of what they do. They're so tuned into to social media. It's kind of like an extension of who they are.
Yeah.
More so than it is for, I think, older generations.
Right.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Try to look at the bright side. There's so many more different people out there that if you're a child who feels different because of your interest or because of your sexuality, there's going to be somebody out there who's like you, and they're going to be much more reachable and approachable than they ever were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I think that they're expecting that, though. The whole world is open to them. But with that, is always a negative thing. And in my eyes, I think the lack of privacy.
Right. But that's the thing, is that I think like Heather was saying, and this is sometimes something that I've also read about a little bit, is that, the kid's already used to this kind of a thing, right?
But they'll never know the joy of having some privacy.
Having privacy, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
you have to work on setting examples and setting limits for them at an early age so they grow up with those limits and expectations.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think, important to teach them to kind of enjoy life without taking that selfie or without putting on social media. I know a lot of times you'll go places with some younger people and you're having a great day, you're at some awesome event, and their phone will die or something, and they'll be like, oh my God, I can't put up an Instagram about this. What was the point of even coming? And you say, well, the point is you're here enjoying this event. You're enjoying your life, you know.
Because I guess
part of their enjoyment is documenting it, though. Just like, right. You know, I think the excessive way that parents like to post pictures of their children. I have a girlfriend. I have a girlfriend that, you know, takes her son to Grateful Dead concerts and things like that. And, you know, I mean, some questionable, and I've told her straight out, I'm like, do you realize that one day he's going to be face to face with an employer or a school or a girlfriend? And they look back through his personal uh-huh. history and say, what the? Yeah. Where was your mother taking you? What was you must be a freak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because your mother, I mean, we'd have no idea how these actions of us as selfish adults who feel the need to put all of this stuff on social media without our children's consent. Yeah. And that is the biggest part.
Right. And the funny thing is people say, oh, I ask my kid every time before I post something. I'm like, yeah, the kid really understands.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
But at any rate, guys, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how's it been for you as far as raising a family? What would you say was your guys' biggest challenge in the past several years?
Oh, boy. You know, I think it's just kind of the job is a job that never stops. It's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And when you're tired and your kids are wanting to play or you need to help them with their homework or they, you know, all the millions of things that happen, you've got to continue to always be on and be that parent for your kid if you want to be a successful parent. And before you have kids, you know, it's your life is your life. You can do what you want. If you're tired, you can sit on the couch and watch TV. But that changes when you become a parent. So I think that's been a real challenge for me is really getting into the understanding that you're always on as a parent and your responsibility as a parent comes first, no matter how you're feeling. And you've got to, you know, always be ready. And that takes right. a real transition to get used to.
Yeah.
And I think for Mike and myself, we've really, over the years, I think we've tried to be more flexible with each other. So, you know, when one parent seems to be doing more, taking on more of the load, then we'll trade off. And we try to really remember that we're a team.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the important thing, I think, is that if you have and this is something I'm always curious about, do you guys have differences as far as opinions about how you should deal with certain situations with the kids, or do you tend to agree every time?
I think we have some differences. I think we're pretty on the same page. But, you know, there are differences about different things, and it is tough. I think it's just one of the keys is talking it through, right. not in front of the kids.
Right.
That's probably the best thing we do is when we have a disagreement and we're in front of the kids, you know, about raising the kids or what's appropriate, we kind of table the conversation until the kids are in the other room when they've gone to sleep, but then we say, okay, let's try to get to the bottom of this and figure out the way to approach it.
Yeah, communication and compromise are key.
Yeah, awesome. So awesome. Mike and Heather Spohr, you guys can find the book. It's the Toddler Survival Guide, Complete Protection from the Whiny Unfed. And also mm-hmm. you can go to the blog, which is the Spohr's are multiplying.com. Now, so tell people how can we reach you on social media if we don't want to start going through browsers and everything?
You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Mama Spohr. And
I'm Newborn Identity. Kind of a play on the movie, The Born Identity, but it's Newborn Identity.
Uh-huh.
And also, if you go to BuzzFeed.com/Mike Spohr, you can see that the parenting post. I'm the editor of the parenting section. So a lot of funny stuff about raising kids. And yeah, that's another place to find you.
Very nice. Well, you guys are amazing, and we thank you for spending the time with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. And if you guys want to talk to the listeners, if you guys are interested in everything parenting and raising a family and everything, this website looks amazing. So check out the SpohrsAreMultiplying.com, and you can check out the family and everything. You guys look like a happy family, so congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye. So, yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing, man. It's like it takes It takes a lot, right? I mean, you have kids. I remember when you're still pregnant and everything, it's still, okay, so things are changing. But once the kid is out, your life changes like immediately.
It's the most thankless job in the world.
I mean, immediately, you yeah. know? They come out, it's like, meh, 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 and that's it. Your life just changed forever.
Yeah.
So face it, folks, when you're thinking of having kids, because like Mike said, you always have to be on. Always have to be on, you know, 24/7.
I just think that that's so unfair. I think it's unfair to tell other parents that. That's why I just didn't talk while they were on, because I think that that sets up a tremendous amount of pressure and expectations, and there are some people who really can't cope with it, and it's okay. It's okay to take a minute to yourself and put on the TV and just tune the kids out.
No, I think so, of course.
Yeah, but to say that you're always on is not. It's not appropriate to even
but
say
let,
that.
But let me ask you this. Okay, you have small kid, right? No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general. You know, a person has a small kid.
Yeah.
And what was my point?
I don't know. Look.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. So you have a baby, okay?
Yeah.
You're saying, okay, I'm going to take a few minutes off for myself, right?
Yeah.
The baby starts, wah, wah, wah. What are you going to do? Just let him cry?
Well, there are some people who do. There are some people who say that that's what you're supposed
okay,
to
but
do.
Is that what you could recommend?
I don't know. You got to take it second by second, I think. Situation by situation.
So you can't take time for yourself unless
the
baby decides.
Not when they're toddlers. But when they're not, because they haven't been through it yet, you know, later on in life, they're not going to have to be held to that.
Okay, but
and
I think
believe
that's
me, when their
talking
kids are teenagers,
about.
No matter how well they've raised them right now, they're going to say, "Get out of my face!" They're going to say, "Get out of my face! Are you you thankless, ungrateful brat? Yeah. Go into the other room. Go sit in your room and deal with yourself. I'm going to sit here watching TV for a minute and collect my thoughts or whatever."
No, that's true. When they understand, Kay.
Right,
when they understand,
right,
you know.
Right. But so
you're right.
I'm glad that they're able to take a very positive spin on the toddler rearing. Yeah. Stage of their lives.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what they're saying. They're documenting it as they progress, you know, so that's amazing. And if people are considering kids, though, from my experience, I highly recommend it. But try to stay together, man. Try to keep the family together, because let me tell you something, man. They talk about there's no more nuclear family anymore. It's like mixed families and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, you got to stay together, man. And if you don't, it screws up everybody. I've been through a divorce. I've got grown kids now. And all I'm saying to you, the results are not that great.
No.
The results are not that great when you don't have a nuclear family. And it could be same sex. That's not what I mean. What I mean is like mixed from different marriages with different kids and different this, and suddenly it becomes new families and you feel like an outsider, you know, in your
own
family.
There's nothing we can do about that. As long as the divorce rate stays as high as it is, it's you just have to adapt.
But I'm trying to look back and say, well, could I have saved it, you know, but there was no way.
There's no way. Because it takes two people.
Right.
It takes two consenting adults who both are working for that. And many relationships, that's just not the case.
They're not on the same page.
The
spores
are a unique set, because they really see the power and the importance of communication.
Right, exactly. And that's what it's about. My situation, communication didn't really exist. So whatever, you know, but that was my situation, and all I'm saying to you is whatever you sow, that's what you're going to reap. At least it was my hope that it was like that until they grew up.
Yeah.
So now we'll see what happens, but we'll see. Once they start thinking on their own, I think they'll see the light in their dad. You know,
I don't know. Plenty of people go for decades without like dealing with their stuff. You know,
I know so. They don't want to deal with shit, man. You know, every time I bring up something serious, it's like they disconnect the conversation by.
Okay,
you
so
know,
let's look at that. Has there ever been a time? I mean, in my youth, in my teenage years, it was Reagan that was president. You know,
right?
And I just think, there's so much disrespect now in politics, and it has so much to do with the power of the internet, that we have the ability to voice whatever our opinions are at any time about anything without fear of repercussion.
Right.
And so I wonder if part of that is because they see around them that there's too much, there's almost too much choice in how you can behave and how you can take a side or have an opinion. And again, you know, what are we projecting if we're just like saying that you don't have to have any respect for the leaders? You don't have to, you can just get on social media. I mean, I'm still shocked that Trump has a Twitter account that he tweets on. It just seems that's such a weird thing for a president to do. I know Obama did it, but
in a different way. So he
Trump is
once
acting
a year
like he's still on a reality show, and I think that's like the thing now. But if you look at his tweets, and then you see all of the comments underneath his tweet, it's hate.
It's never good, right?
It's never good. It's never good. But we're allowed to do that. Now, I know there was a day and age when that would have been completely because I know my stepfather was really, really into respecting that, respecting our political leaders, respecting what was happening on a bigger scale and all of that stuff. And he was in the military. He was a naval commander who became an attorney. And so he had a lot of strong opinions and a feeling in the military that you just keep, you keep your thoughts about the leadership that's taking you to yourself.
Right,
so
that,
and you just you just go with the command. You just do
And now everybody's rebelling. And
Nobody, but it feels very 70s-ish, you know?
Yeah,
like, this is what the hippie movement was about.
Right.
It was rebelling against Vietnam and the political party and everything that was happening at the time.
Yeah, it's like, what do you expect, you know? I mean, the thing is that everything's been turned inside out and upside down in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
so
for the most part, it's good.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's good that there's a lot of shaking up at the top, you know?
Yes, taking away the facade is a very important thing because when you live by a facade, you we're just like, they turn us into sheep.
Yeah,
you know, they
there's
turn
no
us into,
truth
yeah,
anymore.
No truth.
Yeah, that's true, man. That's very true, you know? I don't know what, you know, and then you have all this bullshit about they'll tell you there's no climate change, there's no global warming, and then you have like 16,000 scientists signing a warning to humanity over the health of the planet.
Yeah.
Right? So just because we have people, and that's why it's so hard to be conservative today, because the Republican Party's views are so friggin' extreme and ignorant sometimes that I'm like, they don't represent my views, you know?
And this new tax bill that's going down.
You know, I mean, we need to save this planet. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you see some of the pollution they have, like, in India and China?
Severe.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's severe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're saying, like, we were reading about this last week here, that a day in New Delhi is like 44 cigarettes a day.
Oh, I thought it was like 30 packs of cigarettes a day.
No, no, no.
Was it?
44 cigarettes a day, which is still a lot.
It's
no,
still
44
a lot, because how many cigarettes
you
in a pack? How many cigarettes in a
20.
Pack? 20.
20,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's 2.5 packs, 2.25 packs. Wow. That's a lot, man.
It's a whole lot.
I've never smoked that many in one day. And, you know, so you have to breathe this
shit. So again,
you have
my
kids,
point to
babies.
My point to the spores was when they're talking about, you know, college education, and it's not, maybe it's not worth as much as it was. And I think environmental sciences, that is why I think that is going to be the big field for this generation, this young generation now in high school, you know, is to go.
I think you misunderstood what they were saying. Let me tell you what I think they were saying.
Okay.
They're saying that because there's so much competition.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that.
Okay. A degree is not considered by employers to be a big deal anymore. That's what I'm saying, you know, because I think nobody would argue with the importance of education. There's no question about it.
But you have to refine that down to a more pinpointed statement. Not a big deal to employers. What employers? Because I think that for the big corporations, it is very important to have a degree.
No, but what I'm saying is everybody has a degree now. So what distinguishes you from other people?
They
what
do?
Makes you stand out? Most people do.
Yeah.
Today?
I hope they do.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, I hope
maybe
they do.
Most do not.
What's going to make them stand out is what's on their resume. And that's how it's always been. The college education is great. What you did in college is important, too. All those things that you can put on your resume. The groups that you belong to.
Right.
The any extracurricular if you're into sports.
Right, right.
You know,
there's no doubt.
Marching band.
I love education.
Yeah, you know, any of that. But it's about that resume is pointing to the fact that you're a well-rounded individual that has a lot to bring.
Right,
to
but what if there's a lot of well-rounded individuals? How do you stand
out?
Okay,
so for example, like I've heard, but I have no actual proof of this, that like going to DITECH or a trade school like that. You know, DITECH is just... as or University of Phoenix is equal to how much if you went to UCLA for 4 years. That's exactly how much it is. But I don't think that a University of Phoenix degree is worth as much as if your resume says UCLA.
Okay, so let's say they now have 50 candidates from UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
Now who is going to stand out?
Whoever has more that they did
exactly.
on their resume.
So that's what I'm saying is that the basic, the undergrad degree...
Where you volunteer.
It's a minimum today.
Internships, volunteering, right. All of that on a resume. You can do all that in college.
Right.
Whatever your job is, you can't just be, I was a part-time cashier at Target and now I have a degree from UCLA.
Yeah, right.
There's got to be something.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be something else that you can put there that shows that you were the employee that went beyond what you were supposed to do in the right way.
Exactly.
Or gave more or did more or
right.
went out there and tried new things or just were involved with groups or humanitarian causes or
so
some type of,
saying.
You know, you
yeah.
have to be able to put all that on a resume.
So it's and so it's beyond education.
Yeah,
that's
no, and then I remember back in the 80s. So it's not that it's worth less now or that it's not as maybe not as important or competition. Competition's always been serious. Always been.
Not as much as it is now, because look at the pressure that people have in order to just qualify for the job market.
Yeah.
You know,
in the 80s, I could write a resume that was complete bullshit. I could lie about everything on that application because there was no
way to check it, right?
Except for cross-referencing, you know, whoever you put as your reference on your on your application. And, you know, I was putting my friends.
Really?
Yeah. So I you can't really do that anymore.
No.
No. But that's, you know, you could then because it was all penciled out.
It
and
was. No, it really
nothing,
was.
You know, nothing was, nothing. I know that I had employers that never even checked any of my references. So.
I know, and many don't.
Yeah,
still
many
don't. You know? Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you can tell them, look how many people get away with a degree from a big school that they never actually earned. They just wrote it on the resume. Do you
right.
remember there was some
yeah, I've done
some
that.
Guy that did that at least one? Yeah, but he was a fucking CEO, man. You know? So go figure. You
did
know?
You know that Jeff Bezos' stepfather was a... oh, no, maybe it wasn't his stepfather. Maybe it was his birth father was a unicyclist.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I just think that's an interesting career.
Yeah,
you
right?
know, like,
yeah,
I'm going to ride this one wheel and make a living out of
yeah.
it. I'm going to
pedal
like
this wheel. Well, like in the circus or what?
I don't know. The article I read didn't say where he made a living doing that. But I just think it's so funny. It's like... what do you do for a living? I'm a unicyclist. I can't tell you how much I would like to say that to somebody. Because it's just... what do you...
right.
Because, Sam, true,
but look,
you'd be such a happy person if that's all you did. You know, if you were just a professional unicyclist, can you imagine how easy, how peaceful your life would be?
I suppose, right? Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, and we're talking about business from Amazon. I guess Amazon's cutting prices at Whole Foods again. So
they're just doing what they did to the literary market.
Exactly. They're
deconstructing. And putting in every business, and it's the worst thing they could possibly do. Now, I go back to the making sure that we include books in this conversation because selling books is what the Amazon model was based on originally.
Right.
And a lot of people don't realize that. They didn't get that memo or
yeah.
they weren't around at the beginning of Amazon. But Jeff went to, and I like calling him by his first name because it takes a lot of the power out of the richest man in the world away. We'll just call him Jeff.
You don't want to kill Bezos, huh?
No.
Okay.
No. But so Jeff took a course. He took a weekend course. On how to become a book distributor, how to distribute books. And that is how he launched Amazon. He took a weekend course. He just thought it was a good idea. He heard that this was a good way to make money. And he did. And authors did. And it was a great thing for many years until he fucked it all up by changing the way that he made the payout for authors, which I've talked about on this show many, many times. And unless you're an author, you will never know what this Armageddon that happened to us financially a year and a half ago, when it went from a decent payout to pennies on a page with algorithms that don't actually work. So nobody's really recording those page reads. But it doesn't matter. If I have a 50-page short and I'm only making pennies on that, I'll say I'm making 50 cents now.
Okay.
If you read every all 50 pages of my book, of my short, I've made 50 cents.
Wow. So now let me ask you this. So it's obvious that selling your books that way is not profitable. So there's got to be
a different way
to monetize them. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So let me
Because he's put a lot of companies out of business.
Okay, but without Amazon, you wouldn't have that avenue, that exposure.
Okay.
So he's given you what we didn't have before.
Well,
you don't have to be part of Amazon if you don't want to.
It's vast now. So before, when it was just the major publishers and the indie publishers and all of the book distributors, many have gone out of business.
Right.
So in light of this, what he's saying is that there was a gold rush for authors that is completely gone now. Whoa. And now it's only in sections. The biggest of the people, like Stephen King, will always make a fortune.
Right.
And all of the authors on Stephen King's level will. And there's five major publishers that do, but they are cutting authors left and right because they don't feel that they're going to make the return on their books.
Right.
Barnes & Noble is struggling to stay alive. There was a web, online distributor called OmniLit, All Romance, gone, went out of business this year. And that was a big online distributor for romance books and erotica. So what
do you think the answer is, Kay?
The answer is that it's not going to hurt Amazon at all if they go back to how authors were paid.
Right.
You know, so now me, my publisher, and many other authors I know have all jumped ship from Kindle Unlimited. Right. So Kindle Unlimited used to be a great place to sign up. You went exclusive with Amazon, and you denied all the other distributors your book.
Right.
Okay? And that was good because you got a decent payout. So say that my book was for sale for 99 cents, which seems to be a pretty normal price these days, which is ridiculous.
Very friggin' decent.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's indecent. It's indecent because I'm walking with 35
cents.
No,
I know, but...
Yeah, 35
for the
cents.
Buyers.
So, okay. So it used to be that if you were in Kindle Unlimited, you got paid out from what they call this global fund that happens every
month.
Right,
that's what I figured,
okay, so I was averaging about $1.35 per download on a 99-cent book, and that's where all the profit came for authors. We got a little bit extra, okay?
Yeah.
As a thank you for being exclusive with them. Now, that's gone. Now, if you're in Kindle Unlimited, you are subject to the normalized page read payouts, which means they say that they have an algorithm that checks every reader. So now that's a twofold thing, because it's saying that you, Sam, if you read my books, Amazon's watching you. They're watching what books, what titles you're reading, and
what pages,
how many pages.
Right.
But my publisher and a couple other people have sort of brought to light the fact that these algorithms don't work because there was an influx of scammers who were teaching other people how to scam this system.
Right.
And they were getting wealthy off of scamming Amazon until Amazon got hip to it and started shutting it down.
Right.
Okay. But what they're saying is that you can go page one and click all the way through.
Right.
Some people were teaching people to put the table of contents in the back of the book, so they had to go all the way to the back, which there looked like that you had read all the pages.
Then
it was discovered that there really is no such thing as these algorithms. They're not accurate. There's no way to record that many.
Yeah.
And actually, the amount of page reads, so like when I was in Kindle Unlimited, on a daily basis, I'd say that I would have 300 something pages read of my shorts.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I would do? Let's talk about it after the show, because I think there's different ways you can approach the marketing of this.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously this isn't working for you. It doesn't matter. Listen,
many people. Yeah.
Let me ask you if you could make $5 per book.
Yep.
instead of 50 cents, mm-hmm. you still wouldn't get rich from it.
Well, the thing is with Amazon, if you price your books at $2.99, if you start at $2.99, you are eligible for 75% payout.
I understand, but you need to sell hundreds of thousands of copies.
Right, but you make more money, just even if you sell one book for $2.99 or one book for 99 cents.
Right, but what I'm saying is if you want to live off of your writing,
you can't right now.
I think you got to do it differently.
Most authors cannot right now.
I just thought of something. I don't know.
Okay, cool.
But anyway, guys, we're totally out of time. We thank the Spores for calling in. Check out the sporesaremultiplying.com. Kay Brandt, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tell people where they can find you.
Oh, you can just Google Kay Brandt, K-A-Y-B-R-A-N-D-T, and you will find lots of things like my Instagram, which is K.Brandt, Brandt, K.Brandt, Jewelbox Films is Twitter, that's J-E-W-E-L-B-O-X-F-I-L-M-S. You can find me on Amazon, you can find me on Facebook, I have an YouTube channel with lots of awesome behind the scenes of my movies and trailers, and that's just my initial K. And last name Brett, B-R-A-N-D-T.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, you can't not find her if you try. All right, Kay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.